Welcome to the Master Your Money podcast from drscottbrown.com. Get inside the thinking of investment masters of stocks, bonds, derivatives, retirement, and taxation.
Today, I'm extremely pleased to interview Dr. Williams James Garner to discuss how to reduce the risk of pharmaceutical and biotech investing. He performed his residency training in anatomic pathology at Columbia Presbyterian and is a licensed physician in the state of New York. He's a U.S. physician and entrepreneur. Dr. Garner earned a Master of Public Health from Harvard University and received his MD degree from New York Medical College. He was a resident in pathology at Columbia Presbyterian in New York City. He was recruited by a Wall Street boutique. Newly minted, Dr. Garner began searching out patents that could be brought to market through a shell. He succeeded with three thus far. His focus today is on advancing techniques and companies at significant value inflection points. Bill monetizes firm assets via licensing, M&A, or IPO transactions. He's currently chairman of both an ASX-listed and a public Canadian company. The Student Alumni Association of the University of Puerto Rico School of Business is proud to present Dr. Bill Garner. Welcome to the show today, Bill. In your own words, how did you get started at this?
Hi, Scott. It's a pleasure to speak with you today on your podcast. Well, basically, I was a physician, and I recognized that I just wanted to be involved in translating the best ideas to clinical practice. And I was in New York, and I couldn't get a job in a pharmaceutical company because they really wanted a different kind of physician. They wanted someone trained in internal medicine. So being in New York, what is your option? Well, maybe you go to Wall Street. And that's the opening that I created for myself and that I pursued. So for me, that was much better than going to business school. I was able to kind of jump in and learn from that experience.
What was your worst day in business, Bill?
So, Scott, there are many, many challenges with the early stage investments that I've been involved with. And when I got into it, I thought, well, the technical challenges of drug development will be the biggest hurdles. And looking back 20 years later, that's actually not the case, not at all. And so I remember I'd started this company, we'd taken a risk, we'd invested in it, we'd put a reasonable team together, we thought, we'd gotten public, we'd raised some capital, and we'd run several clinical trials, and the key data was coming in, and I was in New York, and I needed to get a call from the guy managing the clinical trial. It was raining, I didn't have an umbrella, but I didn't want to get on the subway because I knew I was going to miss his call. I'll just kind of never forget, and it was miles, I was way, way down at the bottom of Manhattan, I needed to go way, way up, so I needed to walk like 4 miles or something. So I just started walking, trying to stay out of the rain. I was getting kind of drowned like a rat. And it was, I bet so much on that. It was my first company. I didn't have much capital. I guess at one point I had a $10 million gain on paper, but I didn't sell it. I really was, you know, I was involved in the company. I was the CEO. I couldn't sell. I shouldn't sell. And I get this call, and actually the trial is very, very positive. And it's to this day, I think it's the most positive study, gold standard study, double-blind placebo-controlled study in the U.S., but because of some of the problems with the people involved in the company, eventually I actually ended up losing the apartment that I was going to walk to that day. So I'll never forget that, and it was really, you know, it was my fault because I didn't do sufficient diligence on someone who'd been a service provider for me and then got involved. He'd been our finance person, got involved in our business. And of course we vetted anyone who joined, you know, going forward when we were incorporated with that portfolio company, but it was a lesson learned. It's been a long time, but I'll never forget it.
So I know, for instance, Warren Buffett has a big advantage on other investors because he gets a lot of people calling with deals, and he has a very astute sense for who seems to be honest in terms of the way that they're doing business. And I'm sure it took him years and years and years. You know, he was working with Professor Graham in his business and Newman Graham for many years. And I bet you he learned a lot that allowed him to kind of have that laser X-ray vision. But I know you've told me before that it's really important to pay close attention to the quality of people that you're working with in private placement deals. Can you elaborate on that? What do you do now to kind of avoid as much as possible any kind of dirtbags that are going to be out there in the grass that are going to try and bite you?
Yeah, it's a very good point, Scott. You know, so when I think about that situation where I got burned, I felt that I couldn't afford better people. And, well, the reality is that that thinking ended up being very expensive, hugely expensive. So I couldn't afford it, but I should have somehow found a way to, you know, I was penny wise and pound foolish, I guess, thinking about it. And, you know, and I recently walked away from a deal just because started to get the sense that one of the people was just going to be a problem, and it was just not going to get easier. It's just going to get worse and worse. And so with a lot of these things, with investments or relationships, you know, sometimes they don't get better over time. The challenges just get worse and worse. And so if you're dealing with somebody, that problem, you know, can just get worse over time. You know, it could metastasize, and it can actually, to use a medical metaphor, it can kill the entity. So you've got to be really, really careful. So hopefully we get smarter over time and we pay attention, you know, to those little voices inside our heads, in addition to kind of benefiting from the patterns that we see over time.
You know, my mom was the most successful real estate broker in her town, and there was a woman that came into the office, and she could not pass the broker's exam. It took her 5 times to pass the agent's exam, or something ridiculous like that. So in terms of being savvy on an exam, she was at the bottom of the barrel. However, my mom surprised me one day saying that she was going to be the best salesperson in the office. And when I asked her why, she said the reason is because she's just not afraid to put deals together and do them. And she was smart enough to come and ask mom for help. And she said what was going on was that even though she was dumb as a rock on paper, she was building such strong experience that what mom said ended up coming true. This woman became the top salesperson in the office just because she knew how to fix more deals than anybody in the office. So perhaps that's the solution that you're offering, is that don't be afraid to do deals. Try to work with the best possible people that you can. Maybe recognize that it's not possible to keep all of the Bernie Madoffs or pseudo Bernie Madoffs away, and just do the work and learn from the deals. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's very good. And it's a great analogy, a great story, rather. I think you can. It's a muscle. You exercise it, you get better and better. You know, and I've learned from people in different disciplines, from military psychiatrists, you know, who helped me with insights, with people that worked for me that were much older, had managed tens of thousands of people. So, you know, I think you can kind of get creative and get some resources that, you know, are not that expensive, just through your network, to think about. You know, these kinds of things. You don't always have to be able to hire Boston Consulting Group to come in. Just kind of through your network, you can find people who will help you make, you know, better decisions if you're willing to learn from your mistakes. And typically, I do almost every deal, you know, that I want to do that gets it put in front of me. So, you know, but I you asked what the worst situation was, and I tell that story because it was very painful.
Well, I really appreciate it. It certainly left an image in my mind, and I really respect you more greatly because of the sacrifice that you've made to be a success in your industry.
Bill Garner is a physician, investor, and entrepreneur. Go to egbventures.com to discover more about biopharma investment opportunities.
On the flip side, what was your best day, Bill?
Well, we're basically thinking about some of the, you want to create some wealth for yourself and your investors, but there are also some kind of priceless experiences, I think, by getting out there and interfacing with some of the amazing characters that have impacted the world. So I was thinking about this the other day. You know, I met Sir James Black. He's deceased now, but he's a guy who wasn't even a scientist. He was a physician who developed drugs that over 500 million people took this morning when they got up. They took a beta blocker, or they took the class of drugs that Tagamet represents, H2 blockers for stomach acid. So if you can imagine, one person has had, you know, an impact on the better part of 1 billion people's lives daily. So, you know, getting to know him, working with him a little bit on a clinical trial, getting to hang out with him and hear how he thought about the world and his experience and education, and that you and a small group of your colleagues, you know, just a handful of people can make a big difference. And he, at one point, I think, was offered 10,000 scientists. And he said, no, I really want my 7 people. I'd rather have that and be able to do what we think is right and to do drug development in the way that drug discovery the way we want to do it. So, you know, that's something that I think about. I mean, of course, it's nice when you have a nice gang, you've worked hard, you know, you've gotten some equity in a public company, or company's acquired, and you make a nice chunk of change. You know, that's fun too. You know, so sometimes you're sitting on your couch in Puerto Rico and you have a nice gain, and you know, that's pleasant too. I'd be lying if I told you anything different.
So I don't know much about Sir James Black, and I don't know much about beta blockers, and I don't know much about Tagamet. Could you tell me more about beta blockers, more about Tagamet? It sounds like you had a practicing physician that had patients with a problem, found the solution to the problem. How did he do that? How did he pull investors around him? He must have been British because he's got Sir in front of his name. Tell me a little bit more about this story, and I really don't know much about it.
Yeah, he's quite famous, I guess, in Europe, but not so much in the U.S. So to me, the remarkable thing is he grew up very poor, and then when he finished his training, he needed to pay back some of his loans. So what did he do? He moved to Singapore to work for a few years so he could get himself kind of back to square one. So by not being landed gentry, he was forced to go have an amazing experience, right? And then he came back and he worked in industry. He didn't have a traditional academic career. So I think the fact that he shared the Nobel Prize, I think in 1988 for medicine, working in industry, not in academia, shows, you know, just how he was respected, how much he was respected, and what an impact he had. So it's a story that I think, you know, is an amazing one to learn about. I didn't, you know it for a long time in the U.S., but he is certainly somebody who, you know, made a big difference. Really through his willingness to trust his instincts, and he developed some techniques in drug discovery, some processes and some ways of thinking that people still use. So, and when he was, I think in the last couple of years of his life, when he was in his 80s, he was still pursuing big ideas and, you know, knocking on doors almost like an entrepreneur. And if you go visit the guy, he'd jump in his car and drive you back to the train station or what have you. He was really a down-to-earth person, you know, apart from the, you know, all the well-deserved titles.
Right. So what's a beta blocker that he developed?
So he developed actually the whole class of the blood pressure medications that people take that are foundation of controlling high blood pressure, which a lot of us have. We don't know exactly mechanistically how they all work, but beta blockers, the whole class, propranolol is the most famous one. Drugs that end in O-L-O-L as their chemical name are beta blockers. Mm-hmm. And so he developed all these drugs, or that class of drugs, and many of them, and they have, I think, maybe 17 different indications officially and other informal indications that they're used for. So they're an amazing class of drugs that do things like keep people's blood pressure under control. If you have congestive heart failure or your heart is failing, they're an important therapy there. They're used in the eye sometimes. They're used for a wide range of indications. So it was a massive contribution that he made. And then with histamine or H2 blockers, with drugs like Tagamet, that was a whole wave of new pharmacology that he and his team developed and became some of the biggest selling medications. And for many, many years, were not over-the-counter. They're over-the-counter now. So they help people with acid production in their stomach, and to this day, you can take them.
Here's where the rubber hits the road so that you can start to think and grow rich. Go to drscottbrown.com right now to get an online stock investment training worth $200 for free entitled How an Illiterate 18-Year-Old Minimum Wage McDonald's Cook Becomes a Millionaire in 50 Years.